Jared is with us. Jared, I hope you're still there. Jared, thank you very much for holding.
Yeah, still here, Greg, yeah.
Right, we were talking about flags, and now we're on to anthems.
I heard that all of the flags here, all right, you know, and I was a bit disillusioned there with the rugby team, the way they don't stand for their national anthem. Like, every other country in the world is trying to stand for theirs, but they're big men stand there, and there's some of them, you know, listening to Ireland's call. Like, Ireland's call listens to the national anthem of this country, you know, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be compulsory for anybody playing for Ireland should be made play, stand for the national anthem, you know, because the Irish people are very proud of their national anthem, you know. And I feel there's venues such as big as that there, they should be styling for it, you know.
I don't know the background, Jared, but presumably, obviously, our rugby team's a 32-county team, and in the interest of...
Yeah, and we're 32-county, yeah. I understand that, Greg. We're a 32-county country. Six counties are occupied, but it's still a 32-county Ireland, no matter what way you look at it. You know, when the people's playing but from different backgrounds will say they should either be able to start for the national anthem or else have to start playing.
If I moved to Spain or Portugal and their national anthem was played, I would instantly rise to my feet and respect their national anthem.
Respect the country you're in. Yeah, that's right. Have respect for the country you're in. Don't disrespect it, because he used to play the Rose of Tralee at one time. I watched them, you know, the big men nearly crying, some of them, you know, because they had to stand for that. And there's someone not right about a situation like that, you know, if you know what I mean.
All right, so you're clear in the view that...
We're all Irish men the other day. And women the other day, if you know what I mean.
So you're clear in your view that instead of Ireland's call before an international rugby game, they should play the national anthem.
Yeah, and then if they want to play them at the end of the thing when it's over, they could have that for a song after, for it to celebrate afterwards. You know.
All right, stay there. Mary's on line two. Mary, do you have a view on this?
Yes, I do have a view on it. I have been saying that all along. I just find that they're the only country in the world that doesn't play their own national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have no qualms of them playing Ireland's song, but it's not our national anthem.
And you believe that the decisions would be rescinded. So, but what about in the interests of the 32-county argument that I put to Jared, that it's more inclusive the six counties are currently part of the UK? I don't know.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, yes. But at the end of the day, it's still not our national anthem. Mm. Every other country in the world stands. We are the only country that does not stand for a national anthem because they don't have one. I don't know why they don't. I just can't understand it. But they don't play a national anthem. Ireland, that's it.
Yep.
That's my take on it.
Yep, and quick point to it. All right, thank you very much indeed for that, Mary. So there you are, Jared, one person already rowing in behind you.
I was just thinking there too, Greg, that, you know, the New Zealand was the All Blacks there, they had a way to go, they played the Ireland, and there was someone like, I couldn't understand it, but like a wee wire dance before.
Yeah, the haka.
Like, and they were intimidating the Irish players, I thought, about, you know, the way they're jumping with me, the wee jars or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Before the match started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're being made a fool of throughout the world, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, okay. Right, thank you very much for your comments. I do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me
Take
on.
Take care. It's our pleasure, Jared. Do you agree or disagree? 08660 25,000. Right, we were talking a little earlier on about what seemed to be a light sentence, a fully suspended sentence for a person found with many hundreds of child abuse images, and in fact had uploaded them. And we had this contribution from a listener via voice note.
Hi, just in relation to the child abuse you're talking about earlier, I think anybody who shares videos, and especially people who abuse children, there should be a death sentence for them. You know, for that thought to be in their head, there should be something seriously wrong. They're no functional member of society, and I'll tell you that much for sure.
Thanks for that. If you want to send your voice notes, go to WhatsApp and send them to us. And obviously our listener there going straight to the absolute punishment, death sentence. But we're not even putting them in prison sometimes, do you know? That's how far behind that caller's views that we are. And when I say we, I don't mean we as a people. I mean the judiciary and what have you. A caller says it's not that simple to cut someone's social welfare for being involved in a fracas, but it is an idea. And of course, nothing is simple to begin with, but we find means and ways to do things if that's what the will of the people was. What about all the French flags painted on the lampposts in the waterside and loyalist areas and the upside-down Union flags and Israeli, Palestinian, Ukrainian flags, etc.? Symbols are far too powerful, as is subliminal branding. Too many die for a flag and do not live for it. Interesting comment there. Good morning, Greg. Went past my public service centre. A man was putting up the Palestinian flag. There wasn't an Irish flag to be seen. Where do they get these flags? If they've only decided yesterday, they must have had them and knew there would be no one against. It's shame on them, says Lister. Well, I think a lot of people around here would have Palestinian flags, or they certainly wouldn't be hard to get. Hi, Greg. Lady talking about paid leave for miscarriage, fertility treatments, domestic abuse. Is she proposing employers pay this? I agree there should be leave available, but this should be paid from PRSI contributions. Those should not be put, or these costs should not be put, says this listener, on the businesses. Again, I did put that question to the senator. Donegal County Council have no mandate from the people to fly the Palestinian flag. How are they going to deal with other requests to fly flags for other causes? From now on, our neutrality efforts should be humanitarian and peace-seeking. It's a difficult one because, you know, a councillor might propose a motion and another councillor might second it. So that's motions passed. But it's still, I would have thought, it's an executive decision from the council. It's not at, I don't believe, and I'm open to correction. I should be more across that story than I am. But my understanding is that would be a decision, an executive decision that would have to abide by local authority, national rules. I don't know what the story is. Is that flag up? I'm going to have to read up a little bit on that. I'm not going to lie, it went a little over my head. There are Irish people lying out in the rough weather. They've nowhere to go. Asylum seekers are in shelter. It should be the Irish taken care of first. Now, What do you say about that? There is a we're told, there's a bed for every homeless person in this country. Now, the problem is that many people that were homeless in this country, long-term homeless, it's not simply just a case of putting them into a room. They may well need more resources, more wraparound resources. There has to be a more nuanced response to providing accommodation for homeless in Ireland. They might need supports in other areas. They don't. A hotel room is not a permanent roof over their heads. A tent is not a permanent room over their heads. Collective living, you know, a house, 18 people, you know, 9 sets of bunk beds, that is not a solution. That is how the majority of people are being housed here at the moment. Not the majority, certainly a large proportion of them. That is not an adequate response to the homeless problem here. I know for a fact that there are homeless people that won't go into shelters where there are multiple people because they feel safer out on the street. So I don't see the solution to the housing crisis for our homeless, let me put it to you like that, is the same response to those seeking international protection or fleeing Ukraine, for an example. That is not suitable long-term housing for Irish people, and they need more than that, more supports. There are beds there, but for many people, they're not suitable. And for many people, they might need further supports. So we have to think about this in a more nuanced way and think of, well, what should the actual response be for the homeless in Ireland? And it's not always the same solution that's employed, that is employed to deal with the other people that we're dealing with. Right, Wellness Wednesday now. We speak to Frank Dillon, who's head of communications and fundraising with Alone. And Alone have launched its Christmas campaign, Share Your Warmth. Good morning to you, Frank. Good morning. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. I'm very well. And good morning to your listeners. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Right, so Share Your Warmth, I think it allows people, you know, with resources to offer support. But also you can offer support and warmth in ways, even if things are tight for you. Talk to me about the campaign.
Absolutely, and thanks, Greg. Yeah, share your warmth works on both levels for us. Obviously, as an organisation, a charitable organisation, we were looking for donations around Christmas time. But the Alone's work is very much around the army of volunteers that we have across Donegal, across the whole Northwest. But it's very much around you can share your time and you can commit to becoming a volunteer, whether it's on the telephone service, which is a great way. You don't even have to leave your house to support and help and support and befriend people. Or we have a visitation support service, which is very much about going in and spending time with somebody who's come through us and said that they're lonely in their life because connections are broken or connections have dropped.
Some of us are blessed to be able to look forward to Christmas for whatever reason, but we can't forget. And it doesn't have to mean that you can't enjoy it yourself personally. I don't want people to feel guilty for being happy and enjoying Christmas. But we also, it's nice to remember there are many people that dread it. Maybe their life partner has passed away, or maybe their family are in Australia, and they look at it and go, I cannot wait for January. But we can help sort of, I presume, we can help people to look forward to it themselves a little bit, to see the happiness and hope in it, even in difficult circumstance.
Absolutely, and Alone provides that service year-round, but Christmas is a key time for us. And as you rightly say, you know, Christmas is time for enjoyment, it's time for family, but we still have 1 in 4 people over 65 who live alone. And so it's not always 7 in 10 people that come to Alone report feeling lonely. And it can be recent, or it can be a realization that they just all of a sudden realize that's what's missing in their life. It's the social connections. And that's why the volunteering is a great way if people have the time to get involved with us.
One in five over 65s are living in poverty in this country. Now, given our background here in the Northwest in terms of, you know, disposable income, the lowest level in the country and what have you, we might, you know, that's an average. It might be more in this part of the world. There's many over 65s listening to this show, at least 1 in 5 of them living in poverty, but it's often unseen.
It is. It's very much unseen. I mean, this is the greatest thing about that, the generation, is that it is unseen. They don't want you to see it. It happens behind a closed door. The loneliness can happen. The poverty can happen. And sometimes we find situations where people, because they can't offer something when somebody calls to the door, so they stop asking people to call and come in. And connections break slowly. They break one at a time. And it can be the underlying issues that we try and support people to get back up. And that's what it can be. It can be, you know, sometimes it's just a step to get back up again, to get back to normal.
Yeah, and, you know, we as a society get very angry, very vexed about certain subjects, and we scream and shout about them. And often it's towards our legislators and our government, and ultimately they are often responsible for a lot of things. But we have power here. We can redirect maybe or focus some of our attention on our neighbours, people close to us, people not close to us, and give of our money, of course, but also give of our time. You talked about volunteering there, but you don't necessarily have to volunteer. You can reach out to someone in your community. You don't necessarily need to do it through the auspices of Alone.
I think you're right, Greg. Absolutely. I think, and I think it's, you know, if anyone takes anything from our conversation this morning, it's just make one more connection this Christmas in the busy period. Look, it's busy for everyone, but if you just linger a little longer with a conversation where normally you might just pass the time of day in a shop on the street, or, you know, even for neighbours, we're very good at just saluting them but not actually, you know, engaging with them.
You'd be familiar with the video, of course, from Charlie's Bar in Enniskillen, which went viral and resonated, and, you know, millions upon millions of people viewed that, but they have it in their power to sort of make the difference that couple in the bar made, so to speak. Do you know what I mean? So we can say, right, I've been affected by that. I've shared it. This is beautiful. Well, folk, you know, use that energy and say, well, actually, you know, I can recreate that in my life by reaching out to that neighbour or to that older person in the community.
Absolutely. And we that's exactly it. It's just that one more connection, the conversation. We do a lot of work. We're a founder of the Loneliness Task Force. Loneliness affects all age groups. We're not saying it alone, it's only older people. It affects all age groups. And the funny thing is, a lonely younger person and a lonely older person, you can solve each other's problems. Yeah. It's connecting those things. It's fantastic what can be done.
Yeah, we all got an insight into that during the lockdowns. All of a sudden, everyone knew what rural isolation was, what loneliness was, but how quick we forget as things return to normal. That was just a little sample plate of what an awful lot of people have to endure all of their time for the end of their lives as well. And you can jump in and contradict me at any point at this that you wish. But I have a real problem with our attitude to older people in this country. I think we are changing society to make it more difficult for them to live and to interact and to move around the place. And the narrative, the conversation, the phraseology of issues is as if to blame older people and then to sort of label them or make them feel as they are a burden, which they are clearly not. None of us would be here without our older generation. But allow yourself to be in that moment to wonder how that must feel, to feel lonely, to feel alone, to be effectively blamed for hospital overcrowding. They're not, but that's how it sounds sometimes. To have access to simple things like getting on a bus, going to your local pub, going to your local post office, the security of a local guard station, all removed from you. These are our fathers, mothers, our grandfathers, our grandmothers. We need to put ourselves in that space so we understand what life is like for them often.
That's so true, Greg. And I think there's a creeping, you know, ageism is one of the last isms we're willing to talk about as a society. And I think it creeps. And you're right in the things that get taken away, the post office, the, you know, oh, we're making for the planet, we're moving everything online. Well, it doesn't always work like that, you know, and we've worked strongly with a lot of energy companies about their engagement, where they will actually have somebody at the end of the phone to talk to somebody about their bill, because you can't always just put everything online and whether it's a chatbot or whether it's a form, hope that someone comes back to you, even the press 9, press 6, press 3. So I think it's very much an issue. And lest we forget, this is the generation that paid 60% in income tax, who provided the free education, the taxes that provide the free education.
So and I there's no argument, I don't think, about ageism. I'd actually use a different word. I'd say it's a disregard. I think they're actually being disregarded rather than being ismed. But there could be both. I'm not arguing with you on this. Alone, since the start of this year, 2023, we're only in, we're towards the end of November now, 30,000 individual supports to older people in every town and city in Ireland. That's a big jump on last year. Is this down to the cost of living? Obviously, there's going to be an awareness bump there as well if people know the services are there. But 30,000 individual supports to older people in the first 11 months of this year.
Yeah, and just to add to that, nearly 4,500 in the Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim area. So, yeah, we are seeing a rising demand. Every time we as an organisation have grown somewhat, we've grown our volunteers, we've grown, but we just keep meeting this rising demand. It's driven by poverty. It's driven by, you know, housing issues have become second to loneliness. Loneliness was always the top issue in Alone. And some quarters this year, we've seen housing issues, and that's to do with older people living in poor housing stock. Mm. It's to do with the housing crisis.
And I just want to add a thing in there too. Sorry, but I just to make this relevant to people in their 30s, 40s and 50s now, a lot of older people at the moment do have potentially, although you've just referenced there, obviously, Frank, housing. A lot of people actually do have their own house at the moment. But I'll tell you, the 30, 40, 20-year-olds listening now might not even have that. So we could find ourselves in an even more difficult situation with the pressure on the pension pot and, of course, less and less people owning their own properties, or fewer people owning their own properties. So if it's not an issue for you now, you know, you need to look into the future, because you'll want someone coming behind you advocating and supporting you. It's coming down the tracks.
Very much so. And we did a piece of research called The Double Deficit in partnership with Thresholds, where we're seeing that. We're seeing 30, 40-year-olds, you know, the home ownership model is broken, and that's what the social welfare system is predicated on, that you retire at 65 with an asset. Less and less people are having that asset, and now is the time to put the proper housing in for older people and the proper supports that are designed. And that's very much something that Alone, on our policy side, work very strongly for.
If someone you know or yourself needs help from Alone this winter, call the National Support and Referral Line 818-222-024. It's there from 8am to 8pm, 7 days a week. Alone runs 365 days a year, thanks to its excellent volunteers. You'll know our number off the top of your head. Call us. We'll pass that number on to you. But just the final message to what people can do, what the general population can do to support our older people this winter and this Christmas.
Greg, let's just everyone make, you know, take 2 minutes out of your shopping trip to have a conversation with somebody. Maybe call into that neighbour that you'd normally wave at and just say, hi, how are you? Here's a mince pie. You know, it's going to be...
Don't come near me with a mince pie. Bring me something else, a vol-au-vent or something. But
whatever you fancy.
Check in advance about the mince pies, a scone or something, but okay. All right, listen, come here. Thanks very much, Frank. Keep up the great work, you and the team there.
Slán, thanks very much.
All right, Slán, because my Jean White, take care. All right, back with more after these.
Business Matters, in association with Atlantic Technological University, Donegal. Study for a Doctorate of Business Administration and obtain the highest level management qualification available. Visit atu.ie/DBA.
All right, we're in studio now with Chris Ashmore, the presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast, which is live for you right now on our website. So you can download it and listen to it at your leisure, stream it there or whatever. But we'll give you all the reasons to do so because we're going to tell you how great it is in a moment. But Chris, good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling up, as always.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us. Okay, right. So let us start off with Waterworld and Bundoran.
Yes.
Picked up a nice accolade.
Yeah, good news for them this week. They won a prestigious National Quality Standards Award. This followed an inspection during the year, and it was announced during the week that they were one of only two facilities in the country to achieve the exceeded standard category under the Leisure Awards facilities with a pool section. So this was great considering it was their first full season since 2019, and it takes a while to get things back up, obviously, after COVID and everything. So their general manager, Anya Temple, delighted and, paying tribute to the staff all involved because things like that obviously involve a lot behind the scenes, and so everything is tip top.
Fantastic stuff. Good news for the Muff Liquor Company, green light for development there.
Yes, the Muff Liquor Company has applied and has got planning permission from Donegal County Council for the change of use of an existing car sales building in Muff to change it to a distillery, which will include an on-site bottling facility, a retail shop, offices, and what they are calling a gin experience area. So,
have you ever been to one of those? Not gin or whiskey. I've never actually been to. I've talked about them. I've done interviews about them, but I've never gone in and had the experience.
Yeah, I have been to a couple of them. had a double. Look, it's like the Guinness Storehouse in Dublin. We have the one in Crawley. Of course, there's a Sleeve League distillery. There's been an explosion of distilleries, and this is a great spin-off.
I thought it was
them.
A fad, you know. But we have whiskey tours, gin tours. Like, it's absolutely a big industry, not just locals, but tourism.
Very big. You go to Bushmills, Middleton in Cork, Jemison in Dublin, the Guinness Storehouse, and now here in Donegal and all around the country, tourists go. You get a little tour around. You see the whole process, how things are made, and it is very interesting, and maybe a little tipple at the end and bring home a bottle. So that's good news. The Muff Liquor Company has already won a number of prestigious awards, and it even has a potato-based vodka and potato craft gin.
Watch
this space. Yeah.
Listen, the issue of housing never too far from the headlines. Is there good news in that regard in Letterkenny?
Well, there are plans to build 28 apartments in the Paddy Hart Road, Pierce Road area of the Letterkenny. So that's pretty much in the centre of the town. The first steps of the planning process underway. A pre-validation application has been lodged with Donegal County Council from Jared McCallion, and it's on behalf of Glenturis Construction Limited. 28 apartments is what they are proposing.
Now, no one can say that Chris isn't agile, he isn't flexible. He covers an awful lot of bases, including Christmas gift ideas.
Yes, and a great gift for Christmas, always a book. One that I just came across, again, applying it to the business side of things. It's just been published, Digital Business Strategy, How to Design, Build and Future-Proof a Business in the Digital Age. Now, so much happening, it's hard to embrace all the technology out there. Essentially, this is a book that is offering a practical guide to adapting and embracing the various technological advances and how you can plan a digital strategy. It's ever-evolving, but this is certainly a useful guide. And also just, Greg, to point out, on Friday, a couple of big events, the Donegal Local Enterprise Office, it's Enterprise Awards Night, so good luck to everybody in that. And I think you may have heard earlier on the radio today, Frost's businessman Tim Kelly of the Kelly Group, which is a big player in the telecommunications sector in the UK. Well, he's been given the freedom of Donegal this Friday, a civic reception in Lifford. So,
down the list do you think we are? Do you know, like, how many people before we could get the freedom of the county are ahead of us? I'd say about 164,000 for me. What about, what about you?
You're talking lottery numbers here.
I think so. All right. Listen, well done. It's a fantastic, fantastic honour. Right, let's get on to the podcast this week. Who's on the show with you, Chris?
Yeah, this week, Johnny Patterson from Remelton. Now, he has a gourmet food takeaway truck, Johnny's Ranch. Some of the listeners may well know of it. And we've gone from the case of just traditional fish and chips to providing that little bit extra. He very much believes in consistency, using local produce and, you know, helping the whole local economy. And indeed, he feels that Donegal is probably, we hear about it being the coolest place on earth. And in terms of Donegal cuisine and food and what you can get up here, we really are right up there. And he's very upbeat about this.
All right, let's hear what he had to say to you. This is just a short preview.
Donegal has such a good food scene overall, like, be it from South Donegal to North Donegal. The quality over the last 10, 15 years has really, really risen. And it's probably done, I would say personally, as good as any of the Dublin scenes or the likes of Galway. Like, Donegal's totally untapped. They say up here we are different, but, you know, it doesn't have the same influx of tourists compared to the south of the country. So, like, for me, I think it should only bolster, like, the return this year for all Donegal business.
Now, the full interview with Johnny Patterson is available to download now, as I mentioned at the top of this item, at highlandradio.com or wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify or iTunes. It's on air too at the weekend, Chris.
That's right. And Johnny's Ranch, it's won numerous awards and, you know, very much putting Donegal on the map. Great reviews on TripAdvisor, and the Irish News in Belfast had a headline about it being possibly the best place to go for Ireland's best fish and chips.
Lovely stuff. Okay. Chris, you says Donegal is the coolest place on the earth, right? But of course then the actual phraseology is the planet from Lonely Planet, right? What's the difference between, because you're a clever guy, right? And I'm a bit thick. What's the difference between the earth and the planet?
Well, Earth is a planet, so we can interchange.
It's interchangeable. Is that your final answer?
That's, yeah. I'll go for B.
We shall be tapping into Chris's big brain again next Wednesday. Chris, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
And just to remind you that that podcast available for you to listen now. His guest, of course, Chris's guest, Johnny Patterson, who runs the award-winning Johnny's Ranch Gourmet Street Kitchen, providing the very best of local produce from farm and sea to fork. It's available for you right now or just after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. Kira Murphy is policy officer with the ESRI and is with us now. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
It is Kira, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's a lovely spelling of the name. Thank you so much for joining us. Okay, so new information released today shows a significant increase in immigration to Ireland, right? So there are categories, aren't there? So just to be clear, so we're not, I don't conflate them, you won't, you're all across it. Right, so what categories of people are counted coming here, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so there's quite a few different categories, like you said. I mean, some of these are returning Irish emigrants, so about 20,000 of them are returning Irish emigrants. But then also we have employment migration and migration for education reasons. We then have kind of family reunification. So those are generally the three biggest categories that we see. And then usually smaller categories, we have international protection, which is only usually about 2%. But then this year we have this other category of temporary protection, which is about 42,000 of that 141,000.
So the last one there, that would maybe be categorized mostly by Ukrainian nationals. Is that correct?
Yes. So people who were residing in Ukraine. So again, temporary protection only applies to people who are in Ukraine.
Right. So how many of those would have come through?
So in the 141,000 figures, 42,000 of them are Ukrainians, just because of the dates that those figures are taken.
Yeah, of course.
But we now have kind of about 96,000 Ukrainians, but that isn't kind of covered in this room.
And in terms of international protection applicants, how many over the 12 months up to April are we talking there?
So the figures for international protection are just for the year of 2022.
Understood.
The general figures are just, it's just how the Central Statistics Office counts them. But the rest of so international protection, we had 13,651 in the 12 months of 2022.
So a lot of conversation is about that group of individuals, even on the wider scale of things over the period we're talking here. It is what, 10%? Something along those lines? So less than 10% perhaps?
Yes, the figures aren't comparable because they're for different years, but it is quite a small percentage.
And those coming here to study or work, what is the procedure there? Is that a pre-application where they say, look, I want to come to work in hospitality, for an example, or nursing or what have you, and then the students? So explain how that process works. Not the process, sorry. The people,
yeah,
you know.
No, I can. Yeah, I'll explain it. So it's actually different for EU and non-EU migrants. So for EU migrants, they can come here. They have freedom of movement. It's a very simple process. They can come and apply and study in the same way as Irish nationals. But then for non-EU, it's a much kind of more managed type of migration. So they have to pre-apply for visas and for permission to study or to work. And the employment permit system is quite highly regulated. So essentially, to qualify for an employment permit, the entire sector has to show that there are labour market shortages and that they can't be filled by Irish nationals or EU nationals in that sector. And then they can apply for an employment permits that are sponsored for individuals.
Now, I've already seen it happen, and it often happens, because these figures can get weaponized. I mean, you're not going to talk about that necessarily right now, but instantly people presume that every person that left this country over this period was Irish and that everybody that came back in was foreign, in inverted commas. But you've already pointed to the fact that it's not really quite the case.
No, many of the immigration figures are people who had immigrated here and are now leaving. I mean, migration is something that moves. People tend to move for, you know, short periods of time, sometimes longer periods of time. And like you said, a lot of the, so about 20,000 of the immigration figures are also returning Irish nationals.
And migration, immigration is not a new thing. You actually would be forgiven for thinking this started, you know, 3 days ago. But we have figures going back over quite a bit of time, and of course covered by the COVID period, which shows that people move around in different volumes, and there's been a bit of a recovery, in inverted commas, in the movement of people more recently.
Absolutely. And I mean, what we really saw, if you look kind of the figures over the last 20 years, is the figure this year is the highest since 2007, but 2007 was higher. But the immigration figures really declined after the crash, because a lot of them are very responsive to the economy. It's people moving for work. So they're very responsive to economic kind of factors. And we've seen that kind of gradual recovery. So it's, you know, it's a good news story that our
are at statistics. Anyone who can or wishes to work is working currently, but there are still a number of vacancies. In terms of the inward movement of people, particularly, I wondered, do the figures show in terms of international protection and or temporary protection, where do we stand in terms of how many we're taking in compared to Europe, broadly speaking? Do we have those figures? I saw a figure of less than 2%, but maybe you can give me that more specifically.
Yeah, so for international protection applicants, it's about 1.3%, which is the highest it's ever been for Ireland. But that's more because we have been really unusually low in Europe for quite a long time. And it's really interesting. You know, we're not entirely sure why we were so low in Ireland for such a long time. But we're now, you know, much closer to what we would expect of a kind of a Western European country. This is now closer to our actual European population.
Yeah, because, of course, you have to compare it to the population of the country and to get the true figure. Yeah. All right, okay, it's interesting stuff. As I say, people can have their views about whatever they wish. It's not for me to influence them one way or another, but there's a lot of information in there that I think that can help formulate your views, or at least make sure that they're accurate. Ciara, thank you for your time. Take care of yourself. Ciara Murphy, Policy Officer with the ESRI. Yes, as I say, I'm not interpreting them one way or other. But certainly, as I say, they will be interpreted, and look at them yourself, because it's quite interesting. Do those figures include all the babies born here? Would the social welfare be a reason for immigration or migration? They don't, because this is about people that have moved to the country. So if they were babies born brought here, they're counted. But if they're born here, I'm sure they're not contained within those figures. Would someone move to Ireland to have a baby? It wouldn't be me. I've never considered moving somewhere because it pays to have a baby. It's not you don't get an awful lot of money for having a baby here, really, to move here specifically for. Maybe I'm being ignorant or naive there. I'm not quite sure. Some of your comments here: as a Republican-minded person, Ireland divided will never be at peace, but it is at peace and on the one road, hopefully. And then we can play our agreed national 32-county anthem. We do have to take into account other political, cultural and religious feelings and not ramrod our opinions and culture down the throats of those who it is alien, like they did to us in the past. I mean, if the rugby team are playing in Belfast, for an example, I presume that was part of the issue. The Irish national anthem being played there as the national anthem of the team representing that area. I don't know, I presume that was part of the consideration there, for right or wrong, not making a judgment either way. Rugby RFU are a disgrace not playing our national anthem away from home. They reluctantly play it at home. Also, the media coverage of rugby is completely over the top for a minority sport. D4 driven. That comes in from Martin. Can't disagree with that. Horse racing as well, I think that's really overreported. It's in every sports bulletin. How many people actually go and watch horse racing or have an interest in it? Actually, I don't know how many do. Maybe loads do. I would have just thought it is really a minority sport, but it's given so much money by the Department of Agriculture and also given so much airtime. I strongly agree with the man on earlier. Our own flag only, unless there is a visit of a head of state. Bet you other counties not flying our flags. Under law and of respect, we stand to attention to our Irish national anthem. Our Naveen and other anthems of other state visits shall also show respect to that country. The same is true to when our anthem is played in another state or territory. Let me see. The problem is you cannot question the ruling of a judge in this country, yet questions need to be asked as to how and why this young man walked free. The poor children being abused for his pleasure. Where is our country going? I don't know, but I just wish people were more vocal on it. Could you find out why there's no lights up in Lifford? Is this for the Christmas? They have a Christmas tree up in the Diamond where nobody bees to see it. They've lights up in Sion Mills, Castlefin, etc. It's a shame that they don't have a light up. I've tried to ask why we've no Christmas lights before, but I got no answer. I don't know the reason why. Are they going up? I don't know. The only thing I do know in relation to putting lights up in an area is that it takes a group of citizens to come together, form a committee, go around businesses, fundraise, source the lights, put the lights up, source where they're going to be plugged in. It doesn't happen by accident, if you know what I mean. So I'm not sure if there's a Christmas lights committee in Lifford or whatever. But listen, a caller says, where are the lights? Someone has to do them. Someone has to say, right, okay, I'm going to do this. I don't know what the story is in Lifford, so that's not a slight or a criticism of anyone. But I know they don't just appear. People have to put in an awful lot of effort. 110% the national anthem should be sung at rugby matches. We're the only nation who does not sing our national anthem. I hope that it's an astounding yes from the nation to sing it. The national anthem and flags have been the ruination of our country for years. It's a 32-county state. They talk about a neutral anthem and flag. It's clear from your callers we'll never have a new Ireland. Tolerance for others just won't happen in this country. This obsession with Palestine and subsequent sycophancy is nauseating. The Jews have been the most persecuted people in human history. Their deaths mean nothing to the Hamas apologists. Our country's falling apart, but it's easier to concentrate on a conflict thousands of miles away than challenge your mates in politics and business about how they're filling their pockets at society's expense. Well, I don't have any mates in politics or business. I'm not being defensive, but if that was a reference to me, I simply don't have any. Can we literally ignore what's happening out in the world? I don't think by having sympathy for the plight of Palestinian civilians is in any way taking away from the persecution of Jewish people, as you talk of. I don't think there's anyone in this country would see it like that. Hi, Greg. Did you even try and call your local bank? It would take you almost an hour to get to chat to someone. Push one, push three, push six, and still get through to someone in Dublin. I know exactly what you're saying. I used to be able to, I had this old hack where you just hashed the buttons and the computer would go, oh no, and put you through to a human. But they figured that out. Too many of us were doing it and now it doesn't work. They just cut you off. I just try and keep contact to an absolute minimum, if the truth be told. Okay, listen, thanks so much for your company today. Thanks for listening. We're going to do it all again with you tomorrow morning at 9. So please return, come back, listen, watch, however you want to engage with the show. But for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr and Shannon, have a lovely day.